It's Morning Edition on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Marshall Terry. For the past 3 weeks, WFAE's Fractured series has reported on the struggles of inmates living with mental illness. Many wait a year or more for a state hospital bed just so they can get well enough to go to court. Others cycle in and out of jail, serving what lawyers describe as a life sentence on the installment plan. But it isn't just inmates who wait. On average, North Carolinians who go to an emergency room in crisis wait 16 days for a state psychiatric hospital bed. Some of the problems started 2 decades ago when lawmakers overhauled North Carolina's mental health care system. They cut state hospital beds but never fully funded community care. That should start to change with the recent passage of Medicaid expansion. That will help an estimated 600,000 uninsured people and bring more than $11 billion federal dollars into the state in the first year. But lawmakers and the governor have yet to agree on a plan to build out the state's mental health system. WFAE's Dana Miller-Irvin reports in this fourth installment of Fractured.
For B.B. Smith, social work is a calling. Growing up as a pastor's daughter, she felt those living with severe mental illness were often treated as less than fully human. One of her first jobs in social work was at the Mental Health Center in Durham, where she helped struggling clients stay off the streets.
Sort of like pulling together all the details of a person's life. So, do you have a safe place to live? Do you have income? Are you able to work? All those practical issues of living in the community, particularly for someone who has a hard time navigating just life.
That was 30 years ago, when county-based case managers like Smith would meet clients where they lived. And Smith says people generally knew they could go to a county mental health center for help, even if they didn't have insurance.
They had a pharmacist on site. There were psychiatrists, nurses who might administer injections or do other things. So it was kind of like a all-in-one stop.
But that was before the state started to overhaul mental health care 2 decades ago. County-run mental health centers were replaced with harder-to-find private providers, and the county's case manager jobs, like the one Smith held, were eliminated. There were good intentions behind the changes. Lawmakers wanted to move long-term residents of state psychiatric hospitals into the community, where they could be less isolated. But people fell through the cracks, Smith says.
Some people ended up losing housing. Some people did end up in jail. People would get lost to follow-up, so we wouldn't know what happened to them.
There were also some good financial reasons to overhaul the system. By 2000, the system was in deep trouble. Some county-run centers couldn't make ends meet. And the state owed money, too. And it faced an estimated $250 million repair bill for the state's dilapidated psychiatric hospitals. Moving people out of institutions was part of a nationwide movement called deinstitutionalization. It was a priority for President John F. Kennedy in the early 1960s.
Under this legislation, custodial mental institutions will be replaced by therapeutic centers. It should be possible within a decade or two to reduce the number of patients in mental institutions by 50% or more.
Then in 1999, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled those living with mental illness are entitled to live outside hospitals when they can. By the time North Carolina started to overhaul mental health care, many states had already embarked on deinstitutionalization, says Duke University's Dr. Marvin Swartz.
It wasn't that North Carolina was unique. It just was we got to the game later and overshot, overestimating our ability to create the community services we needed to create this ecosystem in which people weren't dependent on beds.
North Carolina cut the number of state psychiatric beds by almost half. There were nearly 1,600 beds in 2000. Today, there are just under 900, even though the population has grown by more than 2 million people since then. And today, only 2 out of 3 of those beds are operating, mostly because of workforce shortages, the state health department says. Many of the patients who left the hospitals lacked the skills to find the housing, food, and medical care they'd always received, Swartz says.
When we deinstitutionalized people, we sort of set them on this cruel scavenger hunt to pull together these things that were no longer organized by the roof of the state hospital.
At the same time that North Carolina was cutting beds, it was also revamping outpatient care. Private providers were supposed to replace county mental health centers, but many of the new startups failed to make money and folded. The newly privatized system was increasingly reliant on Medicaid, the federal program for the poor and disabled. So those without Medicaid had a tough time getting care.
One of the great miscalculations of mental health reform in North Carolina was the belief that most of the folks that they were trying to get out of the state hospital were Medicaid eligible. And it turned out the math was wrong.
The math was wrong because those without Medicaid couldn't afford the help they needed. Ann Swartz says it stayed wrong because North Carolina refused to expand Medicaid for almost a decade. Rob Robinson agrees. He's the CEO of Alliance Health, one of the managed care companies that coordinate mental health care for those living with severe mental illness. He says most of his clients don't qualify for Medicaid. Their care is paid for with state funds, and there just isn't enough.
We have $150 million to serve the uninsured, and we have over $1 billion to serve a Medicaid. So there's a huge disparity between folks with Medicaid and folks without.
Robinson says there were some good things that came out of the overhaul, like newly created assertive community treatment teams to help clients living with serious mental illness stay in their homes. But Robinson has a harder time providing those teams to his clients who don't have Medicaid, and that has real-world consequences.
They just don't get the benefit of a more robust benefit package that they have in Medicaid. And these are folks, you know, because of that, oftentimes end up sitting in emergency departments or are homeless or end up in jail for services.
Now, North Carolina's mental health system is again on the verge of another enormous change. On March 23rd, the North Carolina legislature voted to expand Medicaid, although it won't go into effect until a budget is enacted. Legislative leaders hope that will happen before the end of June. Passage came almost a decade after Obamacare made expansion possible. Governor Cooper says half the state's estimated 1.2 million uninsured will now have coverage.
When this law takes effect, it'll make health care accessible for more than 600,000 North Carolinians, many of them in the grips of mental illness or substance abuse, who need health care, not handcuffs.
The math will now improve for many with mental health needs. And the math is pretty good for the state, too. Expansion will be paid for almost entirely with federal funds. Uncle Sam will pick up 90% of the tab for the new enrollees, and the state's hospitals will pay the remaining 10%. But they'll be getting new federal monies to cover some or all of that. North Carolina will rake in a $1.8 billion signing bonus just for expanding. That's thanks to a sweetener Congress put in the COVID relief legislation, the American Rescue Plan, to induce remaining non-expansion states to sign on. The state is benefiting from its almost decade-long refusal to expand, Swartz says.
They're not only getting it at no cost, they're getting a bonus for their recalcitrants.
No matter who's paying, expansion will make a huge difference for the uninsured, Robinson says. But Robinson's waiting to see how much of a game changer it will be. And to some extent, that will depend on how North Carolina decides to spend that $1.8 billion signing bonus. Governor Cooper and some legislators, both Democrat and Republican, want to spend $1 billion of that bonus on mental health. Cooper published his plan to spend the money over 3 years. It includes the creation of a crisis support network, so those with acute mental health problems would be less likely to end up in hospitals and jails. There's money for more care for kids, and it includes funding for programs to help newly released inmates stay out of jail. Are there any things in there you're particularly excited about?
All of it. I mean, so in order to really make a difference for the citizens of this state who are experiencing behavioral health crises, there's not one solution that's going to fix it. It needs to be a comprehensive plan.
The biggest chunk of money in the plan, $225 million, would go to increase Medicaid reimbursement rates for mental health providers. Raising those rates is critical to fixing the mental health care system, Robinson says. They haven't been increased in a decade. As an example, in North Carolina, Medicaid pays less than $70 for a 50-minute psychotherapy session. The result is that many providers won't take Medicaid, and many simply leave the field. North Carolina's mental health workforce is sufficient to meet only 13% of the state's needs, according to calculations by the Kaiser Family Foundation. There's a national shortage of mental health care providers, but on average, Kaiser found that North Carolina's shortage is twice as bad as the rest of the country.
The unfortunate reality is we are in a crisis in the state. Providers and clinicians are just not interested in getting into the field, and there's clinicians that are leaving the field. One of the big reasons is rates.
Republican Representative Donnie Lambeth of Forsyth County agrees. He's a longtime advocate of Medicaid expansion and a senior chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. He's a lead sponsor of a bill to spend $1 billion of the signing bonus on mental health care. His plan is remarkably similar to the governor's proposal, and it too would spend $225 million to raise Medicaid reimbursement rates.
We've got to improve the rates that we pay you, because you need to be able to recover your costs. And number two, we need to provide some incentives to help nurses and staff get back into the workforce.
But the federal money for increased rates will run out after a few years. Then North Carolina legislators will have to come up with more to continue to pay those higher rates. Convincing the Senate to use state funds to sustain higher rates could be difficult.
So that's going to be a little bit of a challenge. And so we'll have some discussions in conference with the Senate on, are there other ways that we can fund that portion?
Lambeth says he's very optimistic the House and Senate will come to a deal on this. But after watching a decade worth of conflict over expansion and reluctance to spend state money, Rob Robinson says he's still waiting to see if the plans become a reality. For WFAE News, I'm Dana Miller Irvin.
In next week's Fractured, we examine how North Carolina's broken mental health system affects people who end up in hospital emergency rooms. Fractured is produced with the support of the PBS series Frontline as part of its local journalism initiative.